I want to talk to you now about transformational culture. You say you want a revolution. Well, you know we all want to change the world. Now, this group knows where that comes from. It's the lyrics from a song that John Lennon wrote in 1968. It was the B-side of an A-side. Does anybody know what the A-side was? We got any Beatles fanatics in here? None? Well, I didn't know it either until I looked it up. It was Hey Jude. But the song, do you remember what the song was about? It was protesting the war in Vietnam, but more than that, it was protesting the people who were, the lyrics were about the people who were protesting the war in Vietnam. And what it really asked is, you know, you say you want a revolution, but do you have any better solutions to this than the ones you claim you're protesting? Now, in our business, when we think about culture, we think about transformation. Because if we had revolution or even evolution, then what would really happen is we would create chaos. Some people want to come in and they just want to overthrow what's there to create a new culture for themselves. But really what we need is transformation. In fact, John Lennon went on to, if you remember the rest of the song, he says, I'll have to actually read it for you. He says, we all want to change the world, but when you talk about destruction, don't count me in. And that's the same when it comes about cultural transformation. Allow me to pray before we continue this morning. Dear Father, we thank you so much for another opportunity to be here, for your blessings upon us. And now we just ask that you use this time to enrich our hearts and our minds, to point us more towards you as we learn and grow together right now. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. It was 11:45 p.m. on a Saturday night when the phone rang. Jimmy picked up the phone, and on the other end was Scott. And he says, Jimmy, I have some good news and I have some bad news. The good news is we have sold a lot of chicken. The bad news is we're out of chicken and we're not going to get any until next week. Now, some of you as business owners and leaders, your palms are getting sweaty as you hear me tell that story. He said, but that's not all. He goes, that guy we selected as the operator of this restaurant, he decided he doesn't want to work with these kids, and so he's gone back to corporate America. He said, what shall I do? And Jimmy said, Scott, I'm glad you're there to handle the situation. And you know what he did next? He hung up the phone, he turned off the light, and he slept peacefully all night. Now, how do you do that as a leader? Well, Jimmy was able to do this. And by the way, I didn't explain this. I skipped this part of the story. But it was common for the leader of a Chick-fil-A restaurant to call the president on Saturday night and to tell him how things were going. And so when Scott told Jimmy all of this, and he turned off the light, he hung up the phone, turned off the light, and slept peacefully all night. He was able to do that because Jimmy had been part of establishing this culture that Scott was a part of. And he was pretty sure that Scott knew what to do about the circumstances because Jimmy had helped Scott learn these principles. Now, what would you do if you were in that situation? This is the interactive part. They told me to be interactive. You might be tempted to tell Scott what to do, right? So what happened? I'm not going to tell you right now. That probably doesn't surprise you. First, let's unpack what Scott knew and what he had learned. Creating a transformational culture, please work for me. It didn't work for me. You're going to help me back there. I'm going to keep talking. Let me know when we're back on. Somebody point to the screen when it comes back up for me. So it consists of three elements, a transformational culture. Element number one is the why, the purpose. There we go. Three elements, one, two, and three. Thank you. One of my favorite books is Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why. And why is a really good place to start. The purpose. Why are we in business at all? I don't know if you've ever heard the story of Chick-fil-A's purpose. At least one guy sitting on the front row I know has, Fran. But it's an interesting story. Even though Truett Cathy started his business with a pretty good idea about why he wanted to be in business, he really didn't articulate it for decades later. He opened his first restaurant in 1946, and they went all the way to 1982 before something really significant happened. Chick-fil-A had its first slump in sales. Now, for you business owners, wow, 1946 to 1982, that's a pretty good run before you have a slump. First slump in sales, and something else really significant happened. We had built the Chick-fil-A corporate headquarters. I said that as if I were there in 1982. I wasn't quite there yet. But Chick-fil-A headquarters had been built, and Truett was deeply in debt. So what happens when we have a slump in sales and we're deeply in debt? What do we do as leaders? Well, oftentimes we'll go off on a retreat. We'll try to figure out what to do. What are some of the solutions when you as leaders, maybe you've even been one of those people in that situation, when you're in that situation, what kinds of solutions come up in those meetings? More interaction.
Creative.
Pardon me?
Creative,
very creative. What kinds of things do we consider when we have a slump in sales and we're deeply in debt?
Sell
more chicken. How can we get those operators to sell more chicken? Maybe we have a sales contest. Cut cost. How can we cut the budget? And what's the third thing that we really hate doing that sometimes happens?
Layoffs,
reduction in force. Well, Truett and his executive committee, they didn't do any of those things. They actually came back with a reason why we're in business at all. And this is what they came back with. To glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that is entrusted to us, be a positive influence on all who come in contact with Chick-fil-A. They came back with a reason for being in business at all. The staff was so excited about what they had, I guess for lack of a better word, had come up with that they decided to carve that in bronze and stick it on granite and put it right at the front door of Chick-fil-A's corporate headquarters. So that everybody who worked there, came in the door every day, would know exactly why we're in business. So that each operator that came to visit at the support center would know exactly why we're in business, what they're there to do. And team members and all the guests who visit. So what were the results of carving it in bronze and sticking it on stone at the front door? Well, the next year, one quarter of the chain won the highest sales award that Chick-fil-A offers, which is the Symbol of Success Award. It's the use of a brand new car. Additionally, Chick-fil-A hasn't had a slump in sales since 1982. So it went from 1946 to 1982 and 1982 to 2017. The sales in 1982 were less than $150 million. They'll be about $9 billion in 2017. What's more, in 2012, Chick-fil-A became debt-free. As business owners, isn't that the greatest thing? Whew. Be out of debt. You just heard about debt and financial responsibility. Additionally, Chick-fil-A enjoys a 95% retention rate of Chick-fil-A operators and a 95% retention rate of corporate staff. And Chick-fil-A operators, they enjoy the lowest turnover rate in the industry, all because one guy figured it out and said, I know why I'm in business. This is why I'm in business. You'll continue to see this during our discussion. So once we've discovered our why, then we need to talk about our what. What are we in business to do? What's our mission? Well, at Chick-fil-A, for a lot of years, we had a mission to be America's best quick service restaurant at satisfying every customer. Well, when Chick-fil-A operators and their team members achieved this, we had to do something else. So we came up with the most simple mission statement. I say it's simple because it's two words. If you can come up with a two-word mission statement, everybody in your organization can remember this, which is why I like it, because it's two words. And it's simply this: be remarkable. Now, you'll notice that remark is in all caps and it's italicized. Why is that? Because we want to focus on that word remark. We want people to remark about how outstanding the food is, how fabulous the service is, and how fantastic the experiences are. We know a little bit about Chick-fil-A's food. I hope you're all customers If you're not, you need to stop by and see me when I'm signing books after our second session. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about Chick-fil-A more personally. I hope you've experienced our service. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a few moments. But remarkable experiences, now that's something different. Do you expect to have a remarkable experience when you go to a quick service restaurant? So let me describe this for you. How many of you have ever been to Chick-fil-A's daddy-daughter date night? Raise your hand. Okay, I got a couple over here, over there maybe. Great. Okay, I'm going to zero in on you guys. I'm going to try not to make you cry as I describe this, okay? Daddy-daughter date night at Chick-fil-A is really, really amazing. Now, every franchisee gets to decide what experiences they want to have. So it may be that the Chick-fil-A in your community doesn't do this, but a lot of them do. And they all get to do it differently because they're an independent franchisee. So it might be a little different experience. So if you guys have gone to one, you might want to try out another. You might have a different experience. But this is what it might look like. On daddy-daughter date night, little girls get dressed up in their best for a special date with daddy. But they're not going to a five-star restaurant. They're going to Chick-fil-A. And so they get dressed up, they go to the restaurant. When they arrive, they might find a horse-drawn carriage circling the parking lot. Or they might find a limousine giving rides to daddies and their daughters. And when they walk in the door, the maitre d' might offer a flower to the young lady. And then they'll seat them at the table because there'll be no ordering at the counter tonight. There might be a strolling violinist or a saxophonist or a harpist playing. There'll be a photo booth set up because we have to preserve this great memory with dad, right? They'll go to the table and there'll be a menu there, and there'll be probably a tuxedo-clad waiter that will come over and take their order. But here's my very favorite part of this whole thing. My very favorite part. There's a conversation guide on the table just in case daddy doesn't know what to talk to his daughter about. I love that part. I realize that I don't have the slide deck that has the picture in it, but it's an amazing, remarkable experience. Once you know the why and you know the what, then there's the third thing, which is the core values. These are the behaviors that dictate how your business is going to operate. At Chick-fil-A, we have four of these that we focused on, and it's my very favorite thing to talk about because I love telling you these stories that I've had 32 years to actually watch this stuff in action. And so here are the four values, and let's unpack them one by one. The first one is that of excellence. When I think of excellence, I think of a former president we had at Chick-fil-A named Jimmy Collins. He's been gone for 16 years from the organization, but his influence continues on today. Now, I love this audience that I have because you're going to relate to my stories much better than some of my audiences that I have. But a lot of us can remember this. When you actually wanted to print something and you wanted it three-hole punch, you know, it didn't come out of the printer that way like it does today, right? Y'all are all nodding with me. You know where I'm going. So if you wanted three-hole punch, you had to take the three-hole punch tool and punch it. And then what would inevitably happen? The women are probably all nodding here because you've done this with me. What would happen? All those holes would dump out all over the floor, right? So in some companies, when that happened, they might come along and suggest that the evening cleaning crew would clean that up, but not at Chick-fil-A, because there would be no paper holes on the floor when Jimmy was around. So there you'd be, going all around trying to pick up all those paper holes before Jimmy showed up. And it was the same with paper clips on the floor. There was never a paper clip on the floor. In fact, we renamed Jim Clips Jimmy Clips, just in honor of Jimmy. And the reason for this is because Jimmy, if you came to our office, he wanted you to have an excellent experience. Because you would equate with whatever was going on in the back of the house of our restaurant with what you saw there. And if our floors were dirty and there were paper holes and paper clips everywhere, and then if the bathrooms were dirty and you came to visit us or you were an operator, you would say that wasn't very congruent with what we expect in our restaurant. So he was a stickler for those details. When he came to the restaurant, there was a product that, and I tell this story at the risk of you throwing paper wads at me because people miss this product. We've taken it off our menu recently, and we've heard lots of feedback about it. So now I've given you the biggest hint of all. What do you think the first product was that he tasted when he went in the restaurant? Fran, help me. You can't go wrong.
Carrot salad or chicken salad?
You know, that was really close. Thank you for being part of the audience participation, because you came really, really close. It was the coleslaw, which was going to be your third suggestion. But, you know, carrot and raisin and chicken salad, they all kind of fall in the same category. But it was the coleslaw. Now, think about this, and now you're going to know why it's off the menu. The coleslaw had to be made this way. You had to, everything had to be chopped just so. And then you had to have just the right amount of light green, almost said lettuce, cabbage, all the dark green cabbage, the carrots. The dressing was all homemade, and it had to cover the slaw just so to meet the recipe specifications. And by the way, 17-year-olds were making this product. Okay? So now you know why people go, why don't you take it off the menu? It's like, that's complicated. But anyway, and it didn't sell very much except in the South. But Jimmy tasted that first, because after I just described how complicated that is to you, if the coleslaw was right, then it's likely that everything else in the restaurant was right as well. Now, I have one more story, this value being lived out in our organization, that I love. Jimmy would exit the Chick-fil-A, the highway to Chick-fil-A every morning. And as he did, he would stop on the exit ramp, and he would get out and pick up the trash and put it in the trunk of his car and take it to the office and throw it away. Now, this exit ramp was not Chick-fil-A's responsibility. It was the responsibility of the local municipality. But they weren't doing their job, so Jimmy did it for them. And he picked it up and threw it away. He never really said anything about this. He just did it. Again, he wanted you to have a remarkable experience if you came to Chick-fil-A from the time you got off the highway till you arrived at the front door. Funny thing, he's been gone 16 years later. Don't forget, he was the president of a billion-dollar company at 65 when he retired. We decided that's probably not a good idea for the president of a billion-dollar company that's 65 years old to be out on the exit ramp picking up trash in a dangerous neighborhood, so we began to do it for him. But here's what's interesting. I was driving by the other day, and I was watching our grounds crew out on the exit ramp picking up the trash, and I wondered, do they have any idea why they do that? Because if we haven't done a good job of telling the story, they just know that somebody told them to go out there and clean out the trash. But do you think to that hourly employee, it might mean a whole lot more if someone explained to them why they pick up the trash off the exit ramp? So I hope their supervisor has done that. And I hope they know the history that it actually started from the president of Chick-fil-A. So excellence, that's one of our core values. That's one of the things that we have to live out every day, so that our guests have remarkable experiences. Our second value is that of integrity. And you know, I suppose, and I love when I get to talk to a faith-based audience, because I just really get to lay all this out exactly like it is. But there's no greater example of integrity than being closed on Sunday. Now let's go back to, what year was it I told you Truett opened his first restaurant? 46. This is a great audience. Okay, I wish I had enough free Chick-fil-A coupons for everybody. That was awesome. Okay, 1946, that's right. So in 1946, Truett was 26 years old, and he and his brother had just gotten out of the Army, and they decided that they were going to open this restaurant. And they pulled all their resources to do so. They opened on a Monday, and they were open 24 hours a day. When they got to Saturday night, Truett said, I'm tired. And if I'm tired, all these other people are tired, and we need a day of rest. In fact, he went on to say, and I changed the words quite just a little bit, he said, if a man, and I say if a person, can't make a living in 6 days, then perhaps they should do something else. Now, I talked to Dan, Truett's son and now Chick-fil-A CEO, recently, just in the last few weeks, about this, because I told him I was going to tell this story, and I wanted to make sure I had all my facts right. And I said, Dan, people assume that Truett did that from the very beginning because of his faith. And he said, well, that's not real. And I said, and I've heard that's not true. He said, it's not true. He said, that's not where Dad was at that particular point. Dad wanted to make a profit. He was tired, and he decided to take a day of rest. But he said, as he grew in his faith, again, he was only 26 years old, as he grew in his faith and in his business, that strengthened. And it strengthened so much when we stop and think about it. In 1946, was there much open on Sunday? I mean, I wasn't around and most of you weren't, but for anybody who was, they can tell us. In 1946, almost any business was closed, right? So that wasn't so much of a sacrifice. But let's fast forward. Chick-fil-A, the first Chick-fil-A restaurant was opened in 1967 in a shopping mall. What was the biggest day in 1967 in shopping malls for sales? Sunday, absolutely. Sunday. And so that became a little bit of an issue for Truett. So he would go in, and he was trying to expand his business in the 60s and then in the mid-70s when it was really popular. And everybody was eating in the food court at the mall, and he would look to get a location there, and the landlord would say, well, I'm sorry, but you can't open a business here because you're not, unless you open on Sunday. So we know what Truett did. Of course, he opened on Sunday. No, of course not, because that was his principle. And by that point, it was definitely about his faith. It wasn't just about rest, but that he felt like he truly should honor God on the Sabbath. And so he didn't change his policy to fit the expansion of his business. He made a huge sacrifice at that point. He said, well, I can't be in your mall then. Well, as the story goes, Chick-fil-A went into other malls, and what started happening is that Chick-fil-A was outselling all the competitors in the food courts in 6 days, and they had 7 days to do it. And in some cases, Chick-fil-A outsold all the competitors combined. They did in 6 days what all the others did in seven. Well, pretty soon, that didn't become such a big deal for Truett anymore. He was able to go in most any mall he wanted to. And during its heyday, we had about 700 to 800 mall locations. Of course, now Chick-fil-A opens primarily what we call freestanding restaurants on the street, and we choose when and where we want to put those, and we're able to fulfill that commitment. Now, on social media, there's a couple of rumors I'll go ahead and help you out with. One is that Chick-fil-A will open on Sunday. I can't promise that forever and ever, but I have actually seen the written covenant that's not going to happen in this generation, because before Truett and his wife Jeanette died, that was one of the things that his three children did, was form a written covenant, and they promised two things. One is they would not open on Sunday, and the other is that they wouldn't sell the company public. Now, that's really important. It was important to Truett to own his own company. Now, you can imagine a company like Chick-fil-A had lots of opportunities to be sold. I mean, I think about all the headaches that Truett endured in that size of a business and how easily he could have just been out of it and been on the beach, right out there, retired. But he didn't do that because he enjoyed the idea of owning his own business, and he knew that his impact, which we're going to talk about in session two, was bigger because he owned his own business. And if he sold it, he wouldn't have that impact anymore. So I gotta give you a couple examples. A really funny story. When Truett had been in business for 50 years, we opened a concept called Truett's Grill in Atlanta. How many Atlantans do I have here? You've been to Truett's Grill? You gotta go check it out. We have a brand new one called Truett's Chick-fil-A in Noonan. Brand new. Gotta go see that. That's worth a field trip to go see that. But anyway, we opened this restaurant, and when we were going about, Truett decided that he wanted to offer some unusual things on the menu. I don't know if you remember this, Fran. Some unusual things on the menu. And so when he was growing up, I didn't tell you this, but his history was his mother ran a boarding house in one of the first housing projects in the nation right there in Atlanta. And so when they had Sunday dinner, what do good Southern moms cook for Sunday dinner? Of course, fried chicken. And if you were the seventh sibling of a bunch of them and your mom ran a boarding house, what happens? The guests get the white meat, maybe the chicken legs, then the thighs, and I mean, they just keep running out till they get to something that was left. And this thing that was left that Truett got, he wanted to put on the menu there at the restaurant in this new Truett's Grill. And this was fried chicken feet. Honestly, this really happened. It got worse because Truett was so passionate about this that he would put them on a platter. He would cook them in our cafe. And he would come over and he would put that right up under your nose and he'd say, would you like one? And he's the CEO who signs your check, so what do you do? You take it, and I did this number, and then right into my pocket. I went home with more greasy pockets. And the only reason that we didn't serve fried chicken feet on our menu is because we couldn't source them. And the supply chain guy thought he was going to lose his job over it. Those are the funny things that happen. And some of you own your own companies, and you're sitting here thinking, okay, what things have I done like that? I bet you've never done fried chicken feet. But, you know, when you own your own company, you can kind of do what you want, can't you? I think back to an amazing experience that we had as the Chick-fil-A family in 2012, I believe it was. It was the last. We have an annual convention. Again, another thing you can do when you own your own company, as you guys know, you can do things like this. You can invite all of your operators and their spouses and all of the support staff and their spouses to an all-expense-paid convention. And if you have shareholders and stockholders, they really don't like that idea of everybody. You know, even the people who cut the grass, yep. Everybody's spouse, they don't like those ideas. But that was one of the reasons that Truett enjoyed owning his own company, because he could do things like that. And that last experience we had with him, for that year he rented out Royal Caribbean's Allure of the Seas. In fact, we departed Port Everglades right there. I remember that well. The whole cruise ship was just for those 5,000 members of the Chick-fil-A family. Now, this is kind of interesting. I'm sure we have some good Southern Baptists in here. Like Truett was. So how do cruise ships make their money? Alcohol and casinos. Well, being a good Southern Baptist, it won't surprise you that Chick-fil-A does not serve alcohol at any events. And it probably wouldn't surprise you that gambling wouldn't be a popular activity. So what did Truett do about that? He bought them out. He bought out all the alcohol, and he bought out all the casinos so that we could have that experience together. And we didn't use any of it. And that's what you can do when you're in business for yourself and your privately held company. So his children know that, and they like this idea of the impact they can have. And we're going to talk a lot more about that impact in our next session. Let's move on to loyalty. You know, people are often as loyal to you as you are to them, aren't they? Truett just epitomized loyalty. When he opened that business in what year?
1946.
Y'all are the best. You are so good. I should have just brought Chick-fil-A over from one of the restaurants for you. But that's where you're all going to be looking for lunch by the time this is over. I'm going to have you hungry. Loyalty. 1946, he had two major groups of customers. He was right across the street from the Ford Motor Plant. And he was right down the street from Delta Airlines, both of which, of course, worked three shifts, 24 hours a day. And so it was very common for those employees to come and spend time with Truett in the restaurant. You know, he will tell you it's not that the food was so great, but it was that they came in and people knew them. It was kind of like the Cheers of its time, where everybody knows your name, without the alcohol, of course, where everybody knows your name. And knows your and he and his employees knew their regular orders, and he knew their stories. And so that was a gathering place. And so it wasn't uncommon that employees of Delta Airlines and employees of the Ford Motor Company would eat with him three times a day. So when Truett became successful, which this was 1946, we fast forward, it was way into the mid-70s, decades later before he would be considered a somewhat wealthy man. He never drove anything but a Ford automobile. And he gave away 1,900 of them as sales awards to his Chick-fil-A operators in his lifetime. That's loyalty. Delta Airlines, all those years, it was the preferred airline of Chick-fil-A, and we travel a lot. All of our chartered flights to our annual conventions, Delta Airlines. Now, some people go, well, I've been to Atlanta. I know when you come up that escalator and you look up, all on one side, on this side, it has all these airlines listed on the blue. And on the left side, it just has Delta. So what choice did you really have? Well, that wasn't always the case. We used to have another competitor, eventually moved down here, and eventually went out of business. So there were opportunities, but he was loyal to them because they were loyal to him. It's that way too with employees. When someone came to work for Chick-fil-A after their 6-month or 6-year interview process, I had something to do with that, but that's another story for another day. When they came to work for Chick-fil-A, the reason we had such a long employment process wasn't because it took us that long to make a decision. It was we wanted that person to make a really good decision. It was a decision for both of us. So once we made that decision, the intention was you'd be in business together for a long time. And so if we found that we had made a poor decision, and we had to go see Truett, because Truett, up until later in his life, he said people decisions are the most important decisions you make. And so he said, I like to control those decisions. So as business leaders, think about that. People decisions are the most important decisions you make. Who you hire, who you promote, and who you fire. It's very, very important. So he made all those decisions, and you didn't do those things without going to him. I did have a situation where I had to creatively help somebody resign one time to avoid having that conversation. But anyway, it's funny how things just fly through your head when you're speaking, and you go, oh, yeah, I remember that time. Anyway, but if you went to Truett about making a change, he would ask you, what have you done? You selected that person, so what have you done to help make them successful? And you might rattle off a few things you'd done to help them. And he'd look at you, and he'd smile, and he'd say, go try again. You selected that person, and you figure out how to make them successful. So you'd go through this coaching and this training and all these things. And you know, I have to tell you something, he's a wise man. Because if you did what you're supposed to do, about 85% of the time, it got better. He was right. Especially if you did it two or three times. So so it took about three times to have that conversation before Truett would concede and go, okay, you made a bad decision, make a better one next time. He's very, very loyal to people. So let's talk about this last value of generosity. Oh, I don't think there's anything that I've seen lived out in my Chick-fil-A career more than generosity. Not just from Truett, he taught an entire organization how to be generous. And you've probably heard about ways that Chick-fil-A is generous. We gave away $8.8 million in our Remarkable Futures College Scholarship Program this year. Truett has 13 foster care homes that still operate 3 years after his death, in which he's had hundreds of young people come into his custody through that program and provided them every possible opportunity, including their college and postgraduate educations. Some of the things that he was known for. But I think possibly the greatest example of generosity to me at Chick-fil-A is the opportunity for somebody to be a Chick-fil-A operator, to go into business with Chick-fil-A. Because you see, when Truett started his first restaurant in 1946, if you don't remember anything else, you're going to remember that date. When he started his first restaurant, he and his brothers, I told you, pulled all their resources. They had grown up in a housing project in Atlanta. They were poor. Their father had gone all but bankrupt. It was a tough situation. And so when he had a chance to expand his business, he said, you know, I'm not sure I want all the problems associated with running multiple locations. Can some of you relate to that? And he said, I'm not sure I want to own all that. And he said, you know, what I'd really like to do is give some other people an opportunity to be in business. And so he created this agreement where somebody for a very nominal fee can go into business with Chick-fil-A. Truett's part of the deal was to provide the capital, the physical capital of the restaurant, the location, the equipment, the first part of the inventory. And the person that he went in business with, their job was to provide the everyday sweat equity of the business. He didn't want somebody who would just come in and buy up a territory and never be present in the business. He wanted somebody who would go into that community and lead the people and represent his good name. So that's how he came up with this idea. But what was great about that, not only did Truett get what he wanted in terms of growing a business with people who were really vested, but the other thing that he got out of that is the joy of watching people have opportunities they would have never, ever otherwise had. The joy of watching other people achieve their dreams. I think of one in particular, and you go, oh yeah, he got his store because he was your cousin. That's not true at all. I actually extracted, at one time I was responsible for franchisee selection at Chick-fil-A, and I extracted myself out of Keith's process. He had to go through it on his own. He started as a team member when he was 15 years old at a local Chick-fil-A and worked there all through high school. His parents really struggled. They didn't have a lot of money. Keith worked himself through college, working at a different Chick-fil-A. Worked at another Chick-fil-A when he came home on weekends, paid his way through school. When he got out, he had to go into a program called the Management Development Program, where he worked for another operator as a leader for a period of time learning how to be a Chick-fil-A operator. He finally got his first opportunity to go into business with Chick-fil-A, and it was, for those of you who are from Atlanta, it was in the gang-infested mall, Macon Mall, south of Atlanta. And just scared to death every day, went to work, didn't make a dime. It was an unprofitable restaurant. Part of his job was to close that down. By the way, that happened with some of the mall restaurants. When I say unprofitable, it was unprofitable to the operator. And when it did not was not an opportunity that was viable anymore, Chick-fil-A began pulling out of mall restaurants. So in your community, you may have experienced that. And we instead went on the street where that provided a better opportunity for the operator. But Keith had that experience, and then he went over to another location, another small town in Georgia that had two of those freestanding restaurants in it, and he was the mall operator, which was a challenge. Recently, he got to open his own Chick-fil-A north of Atlanta in Woodstock, a brand new Chick-fil-A, brand new decor, and he has four little kids that all know how to say, "My pleasure." And that was just what Truett had in mind. And the epitome of his generosity, that he wanted other people to have that kind of opportunity. And an opportunity that will span generations long after Truett, as I said. So there you have it. Decide on your purpose, commit to your mission, identify your core values, and that last one is affirm your guiding principles. If we had an hour, we would talk about guiding principles. I talked to you about one of them, so I'm not going to break them down and tell you the story, but I have a few minutes, so I'll just tell you real quickly what they are. One is make second mile second nature, and we're going to talk about that in our next session, so you'll get a little bit of that in there. One is family owned and operated. And then the last one is treat everybody with honor, dignity, and respect. And you're going to hear a little bit about that in our next session, too. So that's what those are. So what about Scott, Deanne? You're supposed to ask me that, Fran. What happened to Scott? What happened to Scott? Well, you're not going to like my answer because I don't know. I don't know what happened. Jimmy doesn't know what happened. He didn't ask. Because if he'd asked, what did that mean? He was second-guessing what he had taught him. So we don't know what happened. The restaurant stayed open, so we assume that Scott found a way to get chicken. Maybe he got it from another restaurant in the market. They found another Chick-fil-A operator that ran the store. But the important thing was that Jimmy didn't second-guess. He didn't ask. It was taken care of. And it was taken care of because Scott knew the why, the purpose. Because he knew the mission. What are we in business to do? He knew the core values, the behaviors that dictate what we do. He knew all of those things. So he knew how to handle the situation. So if you've done that in your business, if you have clearly created expectations as to why we're in business, what we're in business to do, and how we're going to do that, then your employees are empowered in the same way that Scott was. And so you get to write the stories about your organization and how this is demonstrated. And if you're not there, this is your opportunity to think about transforming your culture. And I wish you the very best in that endeavor. And I saved a few minutes intentionally because this is the other part of the interactive. If you have some questions that you'd like me to answer, we have just a few minutes to do that. Yes, ma'am. All right, turn off the recordings. There's a few with iPhone recordings going, and I'll tell the truth, okay? I'm really serious. This is just between us, okay? We're Christian business people together, so we'll share this. We are working on our international plans. Can't be real specific, but Asia is part of that long-term plan, so we have taken a look at that, along with other places around the world, but that... we're learning that that's a really good market. So, especially for chicken, exactly, and chicken maybe so. We're not in that business, but But thanks for asking, and I hope you have a great, I hope, and if you will see me afterwards, I will give you something so that while you're in the States, you can go and try Chick-fil-A for the first time. Yes?
What has been your success in operating in secular, progressive locales, cities, communities, and your responses to their pushback?
So glad you asked that question, because it actually gives me an opportunity to go back to one of the principles that I didn't unpack, so I'll unpack it with you now. We decided a few years ago that we were in not just the restaurant business, we've always been in the people business, but that we, at the same time, we are in the restaurant business, and we can't impact anybody's life unless we are a place that anybody feels welcome to come. And so we made our hospitality policy to treat everyone with honor, dignity, and respect. And we're made up of 100, I mean, the rubber really meets the road with Chick-fil-A and those 120,000 Chick-fil-A employees that work for Chick-fil-A operators, you know, which are as diverse as our population itself. They represent a lot of different walks in life. And so our intent is that we want everybody to feel welcome. It's just like the church. If you can't get people in the door, then you can't impact their lives. Well, if people don't feel welcome in our restaurants, then we have no opportunity to influence and impact. So that became our hospitality policy. And you know, it has its own language, the language of it's my pleasure. I love the fact that we're here at the Ritz, because Truett had spent some time with Horst Schultze when back a number of years ago, and he loved that when he would come to the Ritz-Carlton and he would say thank you, that the employees would say my pleasure. I'm sure every one of you have heard that at least 100 times while you've been here. And you went, oh, they got that from Chick-fil-A. No. They didn't. We got it from them. And Truett just loved that. He especially loved it in a business that was run, that you interacted mostly with teenagers, because they had a habit of saying what words when you say thank you? No problem. He hated that. He hated it. So after he had spent some time with Horst Schultze, he comes to our annual conference, and he stands at the podium and he tells everybody the story I just told you about the Ritz-Carlton. He says, so when your employees say thank you, I mean when your guests say thank you, I would like for your team members to say my pleasure. Well, we all went away, and of course everybody started doing that. No, it didn't happen that way at all. Nobody listened, nobody changed anything. We came back the next year. Truett told the story all over again. And he said, now, when your guests say thank you, I want your employees to say, my pleasure. This went on, folks, for 10 years. Can you imagine any of you running your own company if your employees didn't do what you asked for 10 years? There was a reason for that, because Truett didn't have a lot of rules. In fact, when people went into business with him, he had three rules. He told them, he said, don't open on Sunday, don't change the menu, and put the money in the bank. Pretty good rules, right? So when he started talking about this my pleasure stuff, they thought it was a suggestion. They didn't know it was a new rule. So this goes on for 10 years. So finally, the 10th year, you're probably there, friend, when this happened. The 10th year, Truett comes up to the podium, and I can't do it because this glass is wobbly, but he bangs his fist down on the podium and goes, now I mean it. When your guests say thank you, I would like your employees to say my pleasure. We went away from that convention that year, and Dan said, I think Dad means it. We better do this. So we began incorporating this into our language at Chick-fil-A. But here's what I want to highlight. We have 21 different independent operators associated with Chick-fil-A. They all took that and figured out how to get all these 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds to do this. And they didn't threaten them. They didn't make it a rule. They made it part of their culture. I was talking with a lady recently, a former Chick-fil-A team member when she was a teenager, that's now the director of talent at Charles Schwab. And her 16-year-old son had just gone to work for Chick-fil-A in Denver. And she asked him, she said, Josh, did they teach you to say my pleasure? And he said, no, Mom. That's just what we do. That's just what we do. That's part of a culture. Got a 16-year-old that says, that's just what we do. So a lot of information there to answer your question, but our response, because we've done just what I told you and we've entered in with this idea of treating everybody with honor, dignity, and respect, we've been very welcomed. in a lot of non-traditional markets that you referred to.